Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. The dharmas are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's way is incomparable. I vow to attain it. Contrary to what is the common belief, freedom is not doing what you want. Freedom is non-doing what you want. The still point in practice is the diamond that cuts through all delusions and all defilements. We're really fortunate to have found our way to this practice. Turning things around rather than chasing things out there is a rare experience. It usually takes some profound misfortune or event in someone's life that forces them to ask the big questions. What the hell am I doing? True freedom is wisdom. Wisdom comes from the still point of non-attachment. It's not available by chasing things in order to fulfill some imagined missing ingredient from your life. So we constantly have to come back to the still point because the gravity of our karmic connections and in relationships constantly pull us into situations where we are tested. So do we decide to grab on and go down that rabbit hole of suffering? Quite often we do. That's okay. Because fortunately, we're on this path and we have the diamond that cuts through delusion, pain, suffering. You know, when Buddha said life is suffering, old age, sickness, death, can't be escaped. But most of our suffering while we're here on this planet is all about self-inflicted things that we do. The six paramitas, generosity, moral conduct, patience, meditation, wisdom, diligence. These are all expedient means that we can bring our focus to and use to get us back on track when we're chasing out there instead of turning things around, instead of making and doing whatever we want. Non-doing what we want. We're being guided by our own inner wisdom. And correct action, correct attitude, correct livelihood, and all the other of the Eightfold Path are right there, naturally, without effort, when we stop deluding ourselves. And true non-attachment, not thinking non-attachment, but true non-attachment, still point, is working in our lives. So we keep coming back. Kwantsen Boso. We're grateful. And then we're generous with our time and our effort. And we're patient with ourselves and others when they're doing what they want, or think they want, or imagine they want. Acting out of ignorance, greed, anger, that's very common. Much more difficult to practice the paramitas. But if you want to be a bodhisattva, wake up. Allow the diamond to cut through. There's so many analogies and so many stories about how all of this works. You know, I think of the Oxfording photos, you know, first discovering that you're on the path, seeing the footprints, recognizing that there's something there that's more than what you think. Even coming back to that, you know, there's no such thing as your rise, these different levels. Delusion is always with us. But so is Prajnaparamita. It's only when our eyes and minds are closed to what's really happening that we're losing our way. So I'd love to hear from you guys. Anybody want to start?
I think it's so much easier to forgive others when we see the three poisons. It's harder to forgive ourselves when we see those in ourselves. You know, like when I see greed and ignorance and all that other stuff in another person, I can say, I understand why they feel that way. I forgive them for it. I show compassion to them. It's much harder to have that same compassion to myself when I realize I'm, you know, having those poisons within me, if that makes sense. So it's funny because, you know, you think like, oh, you know, Buddhism is about showing compassion to everyone, but somehow I feel like I personally leave that myself out of that everyone.
It's not possible.
I know, but it feels that way, right? Like I said, I can acknowledge it in others. It's harder to acknowledge it in myself. But when I do, it's like, oh, wow, look at that, right? I can show myself some compassion when I have those ignorant, deluded thoughts, right?
Yes.
So it's a work in progress.
It's also a really interesting way of pointing out that you're attached to ego.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those things that we consider negative attitudes towards ourselves,
right?
Like I should be compassionate to myself.
Right.
That's also another form of attachment. That's also ego.
Right.
It's just working the other way. You know, you're using it like the example we talked about earlier, where someone lashes out and gives you their opinion unsolicited in order to make themselves look good and make you look bad.
Right.
You know, part of that whole dynamic is at play. You're a player in that play as well as them.
Right.
So as long as you have ego and attachment, you're both in there.
Yeah.
Where freedom is non-doing. You know, it's not that you don't react, that you don't act, but you're acting from the place of confidence that comes from original nature, not from the idea of self.
Right.
So the idea of self is what always gets us in trouble.
Well, I had an experience this morning that resonates with this conversation. I got a text message from a relative of mine, and she was going through an anger issue of hers that had really nothing to do with me, but it came out at me verbally. And at first, I got pulled in. I was feeling furious, but I was also reflecting at the same time, and I was able to say to myself, okay, here it is. What do you want to do with it? And it was really a struggle, even though I knew, you know, the good answer was winning out, the other one was. But I just stayed really quiet, and then I just sent a message that said, no one wants to hurt you ever. And I left it at that, and then she didn't say anything back. But it was one of the toughest things, and I shared it with another relative of mine, and they said, oh, that's not what you should have done. You should have done this and that. And I said, I don't think so. It's not what I want to create. But it was tough.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah, sometimes when we ask for advice, we don't always get the advice we want. So are you feeling okay? Are you doing all right?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good, yes. Good. So I see that Dan's here on Zoom. I'm guessing that means he's out in Montana somewhere.
That's right. Yes, I'm here in Bozeman, and it's 75 degrees and dry. I just, the problem I've got with it is I could easily get attached to this.
I'm not here and I'm attached to it.
Yes, I'm very jealous at the moment.
Yeah. Well, the downside is they've really curtailed the fly fishing wheel, so it's not the time for you to come out yet.
Okay.
Because of the drag, but there we are. So it's still great though. It's still great to be here.
Good for you. Wonderful. Glad to hear it. Any other comments this morning?
I'm just going to have the song Let It Be in my head all day now, because it seems to be the...
Let it be.
Just let it be.
Yeah.
No attachment to it. Just let it be.
It's a good place to start. Maybe several Dharma talks ago, I talked about just stop. Before you act, before you do something you might regret, you just stop. Find that still point in yourself and then see what needs to happen after that. Just take a moment. Take a breath, so to speak. Let it be.
So what came up for me in my meditation was, and as a result of what you said, was realizing how I keep going to a place of fear. That's kind of my default, unfortunately. And it's been that way pretty much as far back as I can remember. And so when I'm in the moment and I'm in my meditation, I think that what's important for me to do is know when to stop fighting and accept what is or what happens, and realize that I have to, you know, go back to my practice and remember what's important. To be loving and compassionate and be present in the moment. So it's kind of a fine line for me, and I always tend to go too much in the direction of the fear and fight or flight.
I hear that, and it's reminding me of a couple of different things. One is the Heart Sutra, and once again, just let it be. Heart Sutra says, with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore, no fear. You know, you got to be able to work through it and still be okay without letting the fear dominate your experience. I know it's not easy. Sometimes it's just as simple as stopping and, like you said, coming back to your practice, just stopping and breathing and recognizing, here I am. You know, this is going to pass. This is going to go away, but I'm still going to be here. You know, this is troubling me in this moment, but what about the next one and the one after that? There'll always be something that comes up. There'll always be something in life that is, you know, a challenge. But our underlying attitude towards ourselves and our experience is what dictates our experience. I mean, you're the one who decides whether it's good or bad. You're the one that decides it's this or that. It's not coming at you already predetermined, good or bad. It's your decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing that I'm learning through my health experience, my body experience, is I just ask myself the question, is this healthy for me? And very often, our society's answer and my answer are two very different answers.
Yes.
And, you know, you need to stand up for yourself. You need to fight this. You need to, is it healthy for me? And I find that some of the physical challenges I've had in my life are due to the fact that my response was from the ego place and not from that place. So I'm trying to be aware of that now. And I think it's part of my learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a lot of chronic health issues. I have a pacemaker. I'm missing a portion of my colon. Like, I have a lot of health issues. And one of the things I struggle with is being okay with that. Like, it's really hard to, you know, have those types of things chronically. And then, you know, having a society that focuses on healthy living and healthy lifestyle. And it's like, okay, well, what if I'm not healthy though? Like, right. Or, you know, you hear people say like, I don't care what the gender of my baby is, as long as it's healthy. Well, what happens when the baby's not healthy? Are you not going to be okay with that? Because that's my life, right? And that's the thing I struggle with, is society is so focused on health and wellness and whole being, that when you're not, you're considered broken, right? But I'm like, it's not bad for me to be this way. That's who I am. So part of that is accepting that sometimes you're not going to be healthy and you're not going to be okay and you're not going to have those things, and that's okay.
The whole focus on being a perfect body, a perfect human being, being healthy, that's all coming from the place of fear and the inability to deal with the actual fact on the ground, old age, yes, sickness, and death. What you said about what happens when the child is not healthy? You become that beautiful human being that nurtures and takes care of that child. You become a bodhisattva. Who cares what people think or say? Live your life. The place where we're perfect is not in our bodies. Well, there's a whole other side to this, though, that is really interesting. Is I took this workshop many, many years ago, and I probably have mentioned this before. It's one of those kind of things. And it was like a 5-day intensive. And one of the exercises was to strip down to your underwear and mark on your body all the things you didn't like about yourself. So men and women all standing there, one after another, in front of the whole group, describing what it was they didn't like about themselves. And the most amazing thing is that as you watched each person come up there, then you began to reflect on yourself and you began to realize, well, wait a minute, these are all judgments about something that is not true. Karma, all of it is part of the experience. So here we are. It's what we're working with. Nice sit this morning. Thank you for joining me. It's really wonderful.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a wonderful day.